563-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, Merry Christmas, everyone. Merry Christmas. Yeah, it's weather like we would ordinarily expect to see in the middle of December instead of the middle of November, huh? Wow. What a day. And I tell you, here in the Butler area, it was touch and go for an hour or so right around daybreak this morning. We had a lot of ice on bridges and overpasses and a lot of accidents. Right now, most of the area seems to be getting some rain, maybe freezing rain here and there, but the salt trucks have been out and conditions have improved a little bit. We'll keep our fingers crossed for later in the day if indeed it changes to snow, which is what they're talking about. Hey, we have a good program today. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about Alexander Hamilton. You know, that show, that Broadway show, the big hit, Hamilton, has been for like a year and a half. Can't get a ticket on Broadway. Well, the touring companies are beginning to move around now. In fact, it's coming to Pittsburgh, I think, in January. I'm not sure.
Yep.
So is it January, Pat?
January, at least through the 27th.
Mm-hmm. You got tickets?
I got tickets. Oh,
you're lucky. You're a lucky one. Well, we're going to talk about Alexander Hamilton. Retired history teacher Steve Cicero will be visiting with us. He's going to be doing a program this weekend at Suckup Theater, a talk on Alexander Hamilton, the man, the myth, the musical. A very interesting story about Alexander Hamilton, too. It's quite a life. So that's coming up a little bit later on the program. Also today we're going to be talking about a movement that I was not aware of until a week or so ago. It's a national organization called Our Revolution. And they're pushing for, among other things, campaign law reform. Dane Winkler is involved with the local chapter of that organization, and he'll be visiting with us a little bit later on the program today. But our first guest, as you may have guest already because you heard her. Pat Collins is the executive director of the Butler County Historical Society. And as I said to Pat when she came into the studio, I haven't seen you in a while. Nice to have you with us here today.
Thanks for having us in.
It's time for us to talk about the Butler County Historical Society calendar and some gift ideas from the catalog that they put out each year. And within the past week or two, Pat, I got my copy of the new calendar. How many years now have you been putting out this calendar?
This is the 11th calendar.
Wow.
That we have printed and put out. It's the 2019 calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Still a big hit, and we still have lots of pictures to cover through the years.
This started, as Pat said, well, it'd be just over a decade ago now. And I'm not sure that at the time it was meant to maybe just to be a one-time shot, but it turned out to be so popular, right?
It has turned out very well. People love seeing things that used to be here, things that are part of their lives that they remember. Sparks a lot of great memories of their life and times here. So we keep going with it. We started out on the first calendar with postcards of the county. But then we moved into pictures of things that were a little more relevant to our lifetimes, ours, our parents. And now we're getting a little bit newer things, it seems, because those kids are getting a little bit older, too.
That's right.
Things gone, things change, and we keep moving on.
These are full-size wall calendars, folks, which you don't see all that often anymore. They're available. What's the donation this year?
They're still $10.
Still
they've been
$10
$10 since we started. We try to hold the line on that. We have great sponsors who help us out, and the Eagle Printery prints them for us. We try to keep everything local. So last year we had done then and now. We did old pictures around the 1900. Then we put pictures of them. Some of them we had something halfway through the 1900s, and we did today's pictures just so you could see how buildings changed or didn't change in the downtown area.
There were some great flood pictures last year, too, which was timely since, unfortunately, we had another flood in the west end of the city of Butler. Well, this year's calendar theme is Is this a bicentennial or a sesquicentennial? What was this?
This is the sesquicentennial, 1950.
Mm-hmm.
Were you there? Funny enough, we've run into a lot of people that were there and remember some of these things. It was quite a year for Butler. They had a few early activities, but the week of July 2nd to the 8th was when they really had the big celebration, had a huge parade that wound down from up at the boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
Came down Main Street and went to Wayne. Down Wayne and up Washington Street, going the wrong way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't go the wrong way in one-way streets too often. Then they went down Jefferson Street and ended up down around the hotel and Mercer Street area.
Oh, I see. So, you have on one of the months, what is this, February, actually have the parade route marked out.
Yep.
That would have been something to see these floats coming down North Main Street Hill. That would have been quite a treat.
Yes, and they had them lined up all over town to have enough room. I'm sorry, I don't remember right offhand exactly. I know there were over 4,000 participants in the parade, but
holy moly,
not many, that many floats. They were counting people. It was over 3 hours long, which was a little shorter than what they had predicted. I think they kept them moving pretty well. But there were a lot of marching groups and military groups, and people came from all over to be part of this and to celebrate Butler being here for 150 years.
Yeah, that's what a sesquicentennial means, 150,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And was this the founding of the city, the founding of the county?
That's the county.
Okay.
The city itself became a borough about 1817. We were not incorporated as a city until 1917.
Oh, I didn't know that. I
believe there's a date in March, but I'm not remembering that right off the top of my head.
But Butler County was formed
March 12th of 1800.
And it was split off from Allegheny County, as I recall,
yes.
Right?
Yes, yeah. Yes. But Allegheny County wasn't formed until 1783.
Mm-hmm.
So it really wasn't. Before that, you had Westmoreland, and progress came.
This was throughout the 1700s, even after the War of Independence. This was the frontier here in West Pennsylvania.
It was. People say, I don't know why my family was here. I said, well, we were the frontier.
Yeah.
They were lucky. They got over the mountains and they got here. Maybe somebody got sick. They were short on funds. You had to work. Or maybe they just said, hey, this is good. We're on the frontier. And they settled.
Mm-hmm.
So Butler's had quite a diverse population through the years.
There are tons of pictures of the big sesquicentennial parade in the 2019 Butler County Historical Society wall calendar, and it appears that several of them are taken from the same vantage point, and I have been trying for the last several days to figure out just where that is. There's I've tried to identify some of the buildings in the background. There's a Superior Auto Accessory Store, and there's a Worsley store, but it's not the Worsley store that was on
that
Main
you
Street.
Remember.
No.
The Superior Auto Parts was over Wayne Street.
Okay.
And someone had given us slides, or Hoppy had taken slides over there. Those are your colored pictures that are in here.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to December, Dave, you will see Hoppy's store with people upstairs and down watching the parade. He was taking pictures from there, and that was on South Washington Street. Worsley's was on the corner of Cunningham and South Washington Street.
Huh.
That's now, I believe, Dylan McCandless Coulter
law offices. Yeah.
So that's what you're looking at there. Across the street from that would have been the grocery store.
Oh,
in
I
that
see
time it. Period, before the Tier Garage, certainly long before that.
I see it now. I never heard of Hoppy's. What was that, like a five and dime or a department store or something?
Hoppy was basically his nickname. His last name was Price. Huh. And he was a policeman. He was a photographer, too. He had that Photoshop. I know when I was a kid, Dad took pictures. You went to Hoppe's to get them developed.
Huh.
That is where most of our picture collection comes from. We have his original negatives of things.
Oh, they donated them to the society.
Which they eventually came to us, which protects us with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we have quite a collection. Dave, there are a few pictures in this calendar off and on. There's a picture of the Butler Marching Band. It's not from that parade. We didn't seem to have one of Butler High Marching Band from the parade, but how could you do a parade calendar at all without at least a little bit of a picture of our marching band? So we stuck one or two different pictures in to give the history its place.
There were a number of other marching units, too, most of whom don't exist anymore.
Exactly.
There's Catholic Daughters of America, which was a huge drum corps unit. There was something called the Greenwood Village Auxiliary Women. I'd never heard of that one.
Well, Greenwood Village was a fire company, which was out behind West Catani Lumber, which mm-hmm. is long gone. They had a hall back there, their fire station, the Women's Auxiliary. A lot of these fire stations had auxiliary groups. So they came down, marched, and the description we found of them was that they were all dressed in green. They all had the same outfit that they had made to be part of this.
I think I remember, this would be back 30 years ago, I suppose. I'm taking a guess here. I think they had a drum corps unit, too. And
they did.
Robinettes, the Greenwood
Robinettes.
Village Robinettes. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Even the nurses from the Butler Hospital School of Nursing were marching, all in their uniforms with their blue capes, like Florence Nightingale outfits, you know.
They came out and did parades, I think, for years. If you look at August, it's the one I got a kick out of. This group came up from Sewickley. They were a precision marching group. Apparently put on quite a show at some point during the parade
mm-hmm.
with their precision moves. So,
and the floats were, most of the floats were incredible. They look more like the floats we see in the Rose Parade or the Macy's Day Parade than some of the floats today. I mean, the whatever the power thing was, where they had a car underneath there or a truck, they were completely covered.
Completely covered.
Yeah.
July, you see a Coca-Cola float and the Isleys float. Funny enough, the Butler Eagle even mentioned this float, that the bathing beauties on it and how much attention they got as they went by.
Oh, I didn't notice that the first time I flipped through here. Yes, there are several women in bathing suits.
Yes, they...
What's that have to do with chip-chopped ham? I have no idea.
I don't know.
Well, there were several Isley stores in Butler at that time, so
yes,
they
yes,
probably all teamed up. That's a pretty nice float, actually.
Right, and then Saxonburg had their upcoming carnival advertised on one in June that was a Conestoga wagon. Mellon Bank, they had square dancers on their float. It was such a big thing for that celebration. You didn't shave.
Oh, really?
If you shaved and you didn't have a permit, we put the permit in May just so people could see what it was. You paid $1 to get your permit to shave. If you didn't carry that permit on you and got stopped, they would take you up there to the diamond and put you in the stocks or give you another fine. So there were things like that that went on from early April.
That applied just to men or to women as well?
To men. You're bad. Yeah.
No, the floats are really gorgeous. I mean, they're really, really elaborate here. Very. Oh, look, this Mellon Bank float that you were talking about with the square dancers. It says Butler, the Buckwheat County. There's still buckwheat on the Butler County seal today.
Mm, we're still the Buckwheat County. Yeah. It's a thing around here to be grown easily. So it was quite a chore whittling down what we put in because there were so many groups involved in this.
Each page, listeners, each month, each page has three or four pictures in, some in color, some in black and white. So there's lots of pictures of the Butler County Bicentennial, 150th anniversary of the founding of the county. That's the theme of the Butler County Historical Society calendar for this year. And where can people get these? I know a lot of folks like to use them as stocking stuffers at Christmas time.
Great stocking stuffers. If you're going to a party and need a hostess gift, this is a great thing. Mm-hmm. You can pick them up in our office right behind the courthouse. We have a 20-minute parking spot at 123 West Diamond Street. May's Music Shop and Natilly's North Restaurant has them there in stock. You can stop in any time and get them.
$10 donation, and that goes to the Historical Society.
So
that
goes
helps support your work, right?
Right. And we have old ones from other years. Like last year, we still have a handful of these left. We sell those for $5. People like them for the pictures.
Mm-hmm. Souvenirs.
So, good things.
That's a nice thing to send to relatives who may have moved away from Butler or something like that. It's a nice remembrance for them.
Yep. They get, some people get on our website at butlerhistory.com and buy them, and we ship them. They're all over the country already, so it's a good thing.
Well, speaking of your website, I want to talk a little bit as well about the catalog that the Butler County Historical Society puts out every year. I've got a copy. I got mine along with the calendar, which Pat sent up to me. And this is, it's about 15 or 16 pages. So, you know, it's not just a bulletin. I mean, it's a small catalog. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of gift ideas in there. A lot of great history books about Butler County, including some that are new and some that have been around for a while. The first new one I spotted is the compilation of essays and stories by Des Schnur about historic Pullman Park.
Yes.
Butler's Diamond in the Rough is the name of that.
I don't think some people realize the caliber of the men that played on that ground. Mm-hmm. Joe DiMaggio, Lou Gehrig, the Butler boys that have played there. And that was their passion. It was really what they loved to do. Whitey Ford trained here in Butler for mm-hmm. a year before he went on and still comes back to Butler once in a while. Now he's getting a little older, but thank heavens Des talked to these people through the years, through the 1900s and when he was younger, and so many people have passed, but he has managed to capture that history and share it. Otherwise, so much of that would be gone.
I had Des on the program here, forget when, last maybe late winter, early spring, sure. Whenever you could pre-order the book. It was mm-hmm. just in the process of being printed. And, pretty amazing. Essays written by a whole bunch of different people. Stories written by a whole bunch of different people that Des has collected into yep. this book. And it's a big book. It's more, you know, like a coffee table size. Yeah, I do have one. Yeah, yeah. Des brought me one. A history book that I've talked about many times, Pictorial History of Butler by Steve Pozar and Gene Purvis. This was originally published back in the early 1980s. It was originally, as I recall, it was a premium for a bank. Remember back in the days, if you opened up a new account at XYZ Bank, you got a toaster or, you know, a set of dishes mm-hmm. or something like that.
Yep.
Well, one of the banks offered this pictorial history of Butler County.
I want to say it was Citizens Bank, and they sponsored it. Their ads in the front. Oh. Sure. Now, it's been updated at some point before I ever came on the scene. But we do still have, those are still popular. I sold one this morning, actually. It's a nice it's a little bit shorter history on and get you around the county a little more than just something that's 900 pages and you can never make it through, you know.
Yeah, and it's not just the city of Butler. It's surrounding towns or pictures of surrounding towns. I'll be honest with you, and this is a true story. I'm on my second copy. I literally wore out the first one because I loaned it to people and family members, and it started to fall apart. So I'm on my second copy. That's a wonderful buy.
It is.
Greatly researched, too, by Gene Purvis and Steve Pozar.
Yes.
Well, it was 1983 that first came out. I didn't realize it was that long ago.
It was. But, you know, we've printed since, and it's available. It's a hardback with a nice dust cover on it. So,
what about the books that the Historical Society compiled on the one-room schools? Are they still available?
Schools Over was our second one, and we still have a good supply of those available. Schools Out has sold out 3 times. Hmm. We just did a short printing, and we have 3 or 4 of those left. So if anybody wants one of those, I suggest they not dawdle, because...
You're gonna lose out, huh?
They've sold pretty fast again. And
was that the first one?
This Schools Out was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
It's your northern townships. If you just cut the county right at the top of Butler Township, everything above it is in that first book.
Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of one-room schools in that area because that was a less populated part of the county.
Less populated. It's been such a fun thing.
Mm-hmm.
All the stories, the people still call and tell us more all the time. More pictures show up. So that's always been a great book. And then Schools Over is basically the same thing. Schools Over includes the city of Butler schools and all those southern townships.
Mm-hmm.
The city of Butler schools... What people don't understand is they were their own school district. Then each township was their own school district. It wasn't until later that the city schools and they went on the consolidations, then that became your Butler area. But that was many, many years later. So it was quite a trip to get where we are today with that.
These are picture books with copious hundreds of pictures in them. I mean, they're really fantastic. Yeah. If you're looking for more history, some of Bradley Floof's books are still available through the Historical Society.
They are.
His book on Sam Mohawk and that murderous rampage.
Yes.
Butler County's 9-Month Men, which was Civil War soldiers.
Civil War. We had 2 units that went, the 134th in a lot of battles, a lot of gunfire. The 137th never fired a gun, was never in a battle.
Huh.
They ended up coming up just late enough that they ended up with all the cleanup. They were actually a worse group to belong to because of the carnage. They cleaned up. So,
well, I know Brad, and he's, first of all, he's a fantastic history teacher, but these books are heavily researched.
Yes.
You got more than just books, too. You got, like, I don't know, T-shirts, playing cards, magnets, and all kind of stuff, right?
Right. We have a set of different mugs and things that have an image of the car factory here in Butler that where the standard automobile. The Austins, the Bantams, and the Jeep were actually manufactured. We've put those on gift items. T-shirts. We still have T-shirts. Just a little bit of everything.
Hey, I never saw these. You have a Wall Dog T-shirt.
We do.
Are these the actual paintings that they have downtown on the front of the T-shirt?
Well, on the back.
It's on the back, okay.
It's hard to see on those pictures when we photocopy these.
Front and back, and I didn't know which was which here.
On the back, we did the artwork off of most all of the murals are on there.
Hmm.
When the Wall Dogs first came, and I showed them what we had done for their T-shirt, then I showed them what we were going to be selling to the public, they said, we want that on the back of ours. So we changed their shirts to put those murals on the back of their shirts. We have those shirts. We still have a few left in blue, but mostly gray. They're a nice thing with all those images on the back.
That's really nice. Yeah. And $15. Wow. Most commemorative T-shirts are twice that these days if you go to a store.
We try to keep the prices down. Our community, again, those were made locally out at Classic Ink. They're good to us, and we try to get our work done locally, and we pass those savings on a little bit, and hopefully people find something they like in our store.
Want to find out about the history of the Standard Plate Glass Company in Butler? There's a book on that. There's lots of World War II books. What about the one that the history teacher in Butler School, here it is, Silent Heroes Among Us. That was put together quite a few years back. I'm going to say 15, 20 years or so ago.
That was Hap Nicholas. And the Butler Tornado Foundation may still sell those. But we had supported them when they were reprinting, and we have a new batch of those down there. Jim Clements' books, I think, are what you're thinking of.
That's right. I was confused.
He edited this book. It does say the English students worked on this, too. I know that Hap Nicholas had something to do with it, but great book. The World War II books are wonderful. They really, those tales of valor and courage and letters from home.
Oh, that's Dick Curry, right?
That's Dick Curry. Yeah. We have those books, and those men are telling their stories. Some of them are original letters from them home. So it's, there's so much.
Also, books on the oil industry, the early days, the boom days of oil in Butler County. And you have things that would be of interest to folks who are building a family tree, too, like genealogy records and stuff,
yes,
don't you?
Yes, we have a lot on that. So there's always something in our walls to hopefully interest everyone, but it's a great gift spot with Christmas coming on. Parties, you need to take a gift to a hostess. You don't want to buy them the same old thing, maybe. A book, calendar, some of the other things we have on the shelf. A few things I actually don't put in here because they're hard to ship. Mm-hmm. We have prints by a butler, originally a native butler, Kevin Miller, of the courthouse and the old fire station.
Oh, wow.
They're a little harder to ship, so we prefer people come to our office to see those things.
That's the old fire station that...
it's torn down.
It's now a parking lot, right?
It is, and they used to have horses, of course, in the back. The stables were still in the back of that room. We have the stable doors were put on our carriage house, the second floor of our carriage house when we built that.
That's
so
when the fire trucks were drawn by horses.
Drawn by horses, sure, sure.
Old bumper trucks. Yep. Folks, by the way, is that stuff online too, like the calendar is? Or
Most of this stuff is online. Some of those prints are online, except the really bigger one of the courthouse. Mm-hmm. Kevin did a beautiful job on this.
Stop in at your office and view them firsthand, because that's where you've got them.
Yep.
The offices of the Butler County Historical Society are right behind the courthouse, directly behind the courthouse.
They are. We have a 20-minute parking space right in front of our door that you can park and come in and try not to stay too long. You know, they will ticket, but they're usually pretty good about that.
I've always been impressed by, and I don't say this just because Pat's sitting here, the Butler County Historical Society is a very, very active historical society. They have wonderful collections of things, and it's a great place to pop in. Even to look at the building where your offices are located. That's part of Butler County history as well.
It is. 1828. That building's been standing that long. It's in great shape. It's hard to keep it up sometimes, though. So everybody should stop in and become a member and get more information more often and be a part of our history.
Thanks, Pat Collins. Good to see you.
good to see you. And I'm going to say one last quick plug here.
Oh, sure, please.
Giving Tuesday is coming up. We are registered on that. There'll be more information out and on our website in the next week. It's givingtuesday.org if you want to check in there in a week or so. November 27th is that date. It's online giving, or this year you can just mail a check in. So that helps. We pay bills and upkeep just like every other homeowner, and taxes. Everything has to get paid. So that's part of our fundraising year.
Good enough.
Thanks, Dave.
Pat Collins, Executive Director of the Butler County Historical Society. More to come. We'll take a break. We're going to be talking about Alexander Hamilton, the man, the myth, and the musical. Coming up next on It's Your Turn on WISR. We will be right back.
Want to give you some school information we just received. You can check this on our website, butlerradio.com. We have some schools that have closed. Armstrong School District closed earlier in the day. Butler Votech closed their third session, also closed for all evening classes. Monatah Afternoon Kindergarten is canceled. Afternoon and evening activities also canceled. Seneca Valley Afternoon Kindergarten canceled. South Butler School District Afternoon Kindergarten canceled. And all after-school and evening activities canceled for South Butler School District. Butler County Community College Brockway site closed for the day. Butler Meals on Wheels, no delivery today. First United Methodist Church, Seeds of Hope, canceled tonight. And the Chamber of Commerce mixer that they were going to have today after tonight has been canceled as well. Again, check our website, butlerradio.com, for further cancellations and any weather information, as we are under a winter weather advisory in effect until 1 o'clock Friday morning.
The hustle and bustle of the holiday season can be hectic. Luckily, Goin Postal is here to help as your one-stop shipping center. We ship via FedEx, UPS, and U.S. Postal Service, so you know you're getting the best rates among all three carriers, which helps you save time and money. Goin Postal also offers packaging services, stamps, boxes, even great stocking stuffers and greeting cards. Located on Shockey Lane behind Villa Grande, Goin Postal Butler is your holiday shipping headquarters that does it all. Visit us online at goinpostalbutler.com.
Butler Ambulance Service not only serves the largest portion of Butler County for 911 ambulance response, but they also offer CPR and first aid training classes and are a leader in wheelchair van assistance too. Butler Assist Coach, a division of Butler Ambulance, provides county residents with medical and non-medical wheelchair van transportation for general doctor visits, shopping, or even transportation to an event. To learn more, visit butlerambulance.com, or to schedule a transport, call 724-283-4385. Butler Ambulance Service. Care you can count on.
Do you have a discount card at your favorite food store and get special savings? Compassionate Certification Centers is here to get you a medical marijuana card, because with medical card, prices are half what you pay elsewhere. Don't get stuck paying double for your medical or recreational marijuana. Recreational states charge double if you're not a medical patient. Be ahead of the game. Visit cccregister.com and in three easy steps, get your card. cccregister.com or call 888-316-9085.
Do I need to put these on?
You can. Welcome back, good friends. Nice to have you with us. We move into the next portion of our It's Your Turn program today. And as I've been telling you for the past couple of days, we're going to be talking about Alexander Hamilton, the man, the myth, and the musical. Our guests are retired history professor, teacher, Steve Cicero. Steve, good to see you.
Thank you, Dave. It's good to be here.
And Larry Stock is here as well. Director of the Cultural Center at Butler County Community College. Larry, good to see you.
Always a pleasure, Dave. Thanks for having us.
Steve, you're going to be presenting a program on Hamilton this weekend, right?
This Sunday, that's right, 2 o'clock.
Suck-up Theater?
Suck-up Theater at BC3, mm-hmm. Yes. You know, we have a lot of interest in the local area here. A lot of people kind of going a little crazy trying to get those tickets to this Broadway musical smash, Hamilton.
Yeah, it's coming to Pittsburgh early in the year.
In January. Yeah.
Yes, I was lucky enough to get tickets. Our family got tickets, so we're all excited. We're ready to go.
Well, it's still running on Broadway, I believe, and you can't get tickets there. And this is the first really touring companies that have gone out now from Broadway.
Exactly. And I was just at the Benedum on my class that I teach. We toured on Tuesday. And they said there were a few seats left, but they're like $450 or something. Ooh, like
wow.
That.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's you really, really, really want to see that. And they're probably up in the nosebleed section as well.
If you want to see it bad enough, there you go. So what's the, you know, I knew a little bit, Steve Cicero, about Alexander Hamilton. Number one, his image is on the $10 bill and has been for as long as I can remember. Right, we got Lincoln on the $5, Washington on the $1 bill, right. Lincoln on the $5, Hamilton on the $10, and Andrew Jackson on the $20. He does not deserve to be there. He should be out of there, but that's another story. Alexander Hamilton, how come he got his picture on the $10 bill?
Well, that, I think, was mainly due to the fact that he was the first Treasury Secretary under George Washington. He was part of the first cabinet of the United States. But it's interesting that you say you didn't know a whole lot about Alexander Hamilton. Ironically enough, neither did I. It's funny kind of story here that we've talked, you and I, about the Institute for Learning and Retirement up in Slippery Rock, and there was a lady up there, a wonderful lady named Lois Larson, a couple of years ago, who said to me, knowing I was a history teacher, she said, how about a program on Alexander Hamilton? And I said, okay. I don't really know much about Alexander Hamilton. He's on the $10 bill. He was the first Treasury Secretary, and he died in a duel. And that was pretty much the extent of my knowledge. But I dived into it pretty quickly, and here we are.
Folks, if you think today's politics are volatile, Alexander Hamilton died in a duel with the sitting vice president of the United States, believe it or not.
Indeed he was, yes.
Can you imagine Mike Pence getting in a duel with somebody?
Right.
Or Joe Biden killing somebody in a duel?
Yes.
But that's what happened, isn't it?
It is. And as you do the research on this, you find out that it was a lot more common than you might imagine. A lot of these men, this is how they settled affairs of honor, as they called it. You know, when they were insulted, well, my goodness. Every 5 seconds today, someone's being insulted and pretty nasty words, you know. But they would have been challenged to a duel back in this day.
Wow. Larry Stock, I want to talk to you a little bit about, because you and I have talked about performing arts series, and I was so thrilled when Butler County Community College, A, got Suckup Theater, so they had a venue for these things, and that the college has continued to support a performing arts series. I know when I was in undergraduate school, there was a wonderful arts and lecture series at school, and I saw people that I had never seen them before.
Exactly.
I saw Ralph Nader giving a talk. Muhammad Ali, for goodness sakes, giving a talk. So it wasn't just dance and music and plays, although that was certainly a part of it, but talks were a part of the Artists and Lecture Series whenever I was in school.
And same with me when I was at Penn State. Yeah. We had Dick Cavett and we had David Frost and some of the commentators from the era.
So you're doing this with Steve Cicero.
Well, yeah. I mean, I had done a lecture series in previous years, but it was a separate series. But this was brought to my attention by my vice president, Ruth Purcell, who had met with Steve and said, this is very interesting. And I said, well, you know it is. And I said, with the musical coming into Pittsburgh in January, we could get a jump on, you know, telling everybody what the ins and outs and all the skinny is on it before everybody goes to see the show in January. So Steve is here as part of my local artist series that I present every year. So tickets are very reasonable for this. It's $10 for the tickets.
Good deal.
And so you really can't beat that. And it's going to be a lovely afternoon of information about the man and the all the. Hopefully, he's going to debunk some of the things that, or say if they're true or not that are in the musical.
So it's this Sunday, Sunday afternoon, 2 p.m., 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. Right,
o'clock. Suckup Theater on the BC3 campus.
Right. $10 tickets, senior, 65 and up, or $8. And so we have those. But it starts at 2 o'clock, and I think it's going to be a wonderful program. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I know you've got lots of stories to tell in your talk, Steve, but can you tease us a little bit? What what should we know about Alexander Hamilton, but we don't know, other than the fact that he was killed by the Vice President of the United States, who was, by the way, Burr, right?
Aaron Burr.
Aaron Burr, yeah.
Yes.
What were they mad at each other about, by the way?
Well, it was a political insult, as a matter of fact. Uh-huh. Burr was running for the governor of New York.
He called him Lion Ted or something like that?
No, he called him one of the most dangerous men in America.
Oh, wow.
And that's what got him killed.
My goodness.
Because Burr challenged him to, you know, either admit that he had said it because it was a private conversation in a bar setting, and let's have at it out in the field of honor.
Mm.
And Hamilton, typically for him, basically tried to be coy, and they ended up in the duel because neither one of them would back down. They were that type of characters. You know, you were mentioning the price earlier, and I've been telling people just as a kind of a sort of a joke that if you're going to spend $400 on a ticket to see the show, it would probably be a good idea if you understood what was going on.
Excellent idea.
And yeah. So $10 is a bargain, right?
This is not, it's very popular musical, obviously, very difficult to get tickets for, but this is not Oklahoma. It's hip-hop music, right?
Number one, it is hip-hop music, which means it moves very, very fast, and it's in a style of music that a lot of people aren't used to.
And won't understand, quite frankly.
And have trouble following.
Yeah.
And then the story itself is, you know, quite complicated, but the really important thing about this, and the reason why I was really pleased to be asked to do this after I got into it, was I realized that this play that Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote is incredibly historically accurate. In fact, he even won an award. This play won an award from a historical society in New York because of the accuracy of. Now, they're not 100%, but then nothing ever is when you're dealing with the theater. And, you know, I've seen lots of movies that kind of stretch the truth here and there. But for the most part, this is really an incredibly accurate portrayal of Hamilton and his times.
Well, there are a lot of misunderstandings about Hamilton. I went online yesterday so I didn't appear to be a total idiot when I was talking with you today. And one of the questions I saw, I forget what it was, history.com, one of those websites, mm-hmm. The question was, what did Hamilton accomplish as president? And I said, what? What kind of question is that? He was never president of the United States, and he couldn't be because he wasn't born in the United States, was he?
Well, as a matter of fact, that wouldn't have made any difference at the time.
Oh.
Because all of the men who were the early presidents were all Englishmen at birth. And so, you know, the naturalization wouldn't have actually applied. And Hamilton, in fact, did have ambitions to possibly be president. And
but wasn't he born like in Bermuda or Jamaica or somewhere?
He was born in Nevis, which is in the Caribbean. That's correct. Uh-huh. It was a British island in the Caribbean. So he was a British citizen, as they all were at the time of the Revolution.
Was Hamilton a person of color?
There's rumors about that, but if you look at the Chernow, is the man who wrote the book, Ron Chernow, wrote the Pulitzer Prize-winning book that the play is actually based on. Lin-Manuel Miranda apparently ran into it in an airport on a flight layover and started reading it and said, I'm going to make a musical about this. Imagine that. But that appears to be one of those stories that, you know, somehow just comes out and who knows what the backgrounds were. I mean, in the Caribbean at that time, of course, slavery was a big thing. You know, sugar cane was the main product. So there were slaves. Is there a possibility that there may have been some African-American blood there in the family? A possibility, but not in the sense that we would think of that today.
Well, he was one of the founding fathers of the United States government.
Right.
How the heck did he get from the Caribbean to be a founding father?
Well, it's an interesting story there, too. He had a very, very rough early life. His early youth probably was fairly typical of the time, but about the time he was about 10 years old, his mother died. And at that point, there's a whole complicated backstory here, but he went through some really rough times along with his brother. And ultimately had self-educated. He read a lot of books and In 1772, there was a hurricane that struck the islands and devastated the islands. And he wrote a poem about this hurricane, and someone told him he should publish it in a newspaper. He did. He gave it to the newspaper. It was published. And a lot of very influential people at that time looked at that, and they said, this is a young man with great promise. We should take up a collection, which they did, and send him to the colonies, to New York, to be educated.
Wow.
And maybe he'll come back. And they wanted him to be a doctor, actually, and then come back to his home and, you know, take care of the people. But they sent him to the colonies to be educated.
All because of a hurricane, kind of like Puerto Rico last year.
Yeah, it's eerily similar when you read the story, indeed.
And as I think Lin-Manuel, he took one of the he took the play to Puerto Rico for a free performance, or a benefit performance for all the people in Puerto Rico, which was very nice, kind of a full circle kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So very,
yeah, he
very
did.
Cool.
Yeah, you were asking before for a couple of tidbits. I guess I can share a couple of stories.
Yeah.
One of the interesting coincidences, well, first of all, speaking of coincidences, one of the criticisms of the musical, which I've read over and over again, is that there are some historians, in fact, who say that the whole gist of the musical with Burr and Hamilton constantly running into each other all through their lives, that's just hard to believe. It was like a Hollywood thing, you know, where that's something a Hollywood writer would write. I have found in my research that actually there's more times in their lives that they ran into each other or were in the same circles than even are in the play. So that, in fact, is very accurate. Their lives were extremely parallel, almost from the earliest days when Hamilton arrived until the duel that brought them together at the end.
Well, now that I think about it, I'm not hesitate to even start talking about this with a history teacher sitting across the table from me here, but during the early years of the country, when it became the United States, the capital was not in Washington, D.C. There was not a Washington, D.C., as a matter of fact. The capital was in New York for a while, and I think it was in Philadelphia. For a while.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So when Hamilton was Secretary of the Treasury under Washington, it would have been in either New York or Philadelphia.
Philadelphia at the
time.
It
wouldn't have been in D.C. There was no D.C.
Right.
So
until Hamilton.
Oh.
Actually, Alexander Hamilton is responsible for the creation of the District of Columbia. It's
I didn't
a
know
scene.
That.
It is. Yeah. It's in the musical. There's a scene, and the song is called "The Room Where It Happened." And what happened was Hamilton had a plan for a very expansive program to industrialize the United States. That was the future he saw for America.
Mm-hmm.
But there were people like Thomas Jefferson who were very opposed to that. They pictured an America of plantation agriculture. And so Hamilton was having a great deal of difficulty getting this plan approved by Congress. Jefferson and Madison opposed it. And so finally, Washington basically told Hamilton, you need to talk to these guys somehow. And so what apparently happened was Thomas Jefferson suggested that they wanted something. They wanted the capital to be in the South, which it hadn't been. And so Jefferson suggested that they get together. And the three of them met for dinner in Jefferson's apartment. And over that dinner table, they struck a bargain that Madison and Jefferson would support Hamilton's program in exchange for the American capital being in a southern area. And that was how the state, the District of Columbia was carved out of two slave states, Maryland and Virginia, instead of being located in New York, which ironically was where Hamilton was living. And the people of New York, of course, were quite upset about that.
Mm-hmm.
But Hamilton, if nothing else, was a very pragmatic man. And he said to people who asked him afterwards, how did you do this? What did you give away, the capital? And he says, the capital means nothing. It's the future of the country that's important. Where the capital is.
This is really interesting history. If you want to find out more about Alexander Hamilton, the man and the myth, Hey, this Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock, Suck Up Theater on the BC3 campus, Steve Cicero will have many, many more stories and much more about Alexander Hamilton. Methinks, Larry Stock, and you're the good person to run this by, because
yes.
I know that you've been very active in theater over the years and in musical theater. This is not the first time that there has been a musical, a very popular musical, about this particular period in American history. There's a musical called 1776, which is one of my favorites.
Absolutely.
It's not hip-hop, by the way. It's more of a
classic
American
musical. But it's,
yeah, traditionally. But it's got some of these same mythbusters in it.
Yeah.
For example, Jefferson having trouble writing the Declaration of Independence initially. We think back on the Declaration of Independence as such a revered document, and we think, well, this must have been a definite guarantee when it came up before the Continental Congress. It almost wasn't passed, goodness sakes. Very touch and go for a while.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that stuff is in 1776.
Benjamin Franklin wanted the national bird to be the turkey, you know. And,
that's right. That's a great song.
And, you know, it's like, okay.
That's a song with... Franklin, is it
Jefferson and Adams?
And they tried to decide what the national bird's going to be.
Yeah.
Turns out, of course, to be the eagle with the, you know, the arrows in one hand and the olive branch in the other. But Franklin wanted it to be a turkey.
Yeah. A truly noble bird, I remember him saying.
Mm-hmm.
That.
Yes.
True story, by the way.
Yeah,
right,
it is.
Great musical. You have some other stuff coming up at Suck Up that we should know about?
We're just always entertaining at the Suck Up Theater. Beginning this evening, we have the Pioneer Players. I think they were on your show earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
We have an original play by one of our students, Gabrielle Barton. It opens this evening called Bleeding Facade. And the rehearsal last night, and the kids are doing a really good job. It's a really good play. It's fun and very entertaining.
She's a very talented young lady.
She was with us earlier this week. She's got a lot on the ball. So I told the cast if they, you know, when she publishes this play, then everybody's names will be listed in as the original cast. And they
that's right. That's always on the first page of the script.
Hey, so I told her she needs to publish it. But anyway, yes, that starts tonight. And, of course, Sunday we have Hamilton at 2 o'clock. And then we've got a couple other big events coming up. Of course, our holiday concert with the Pittsburgh Philharmonic on Saturday, December 8th at 7:30 p.m. And that's a wonderful evening. If you bring a new unwrapped toy for Toys for Tots, you get a coupon for a free ticket for an upcoming show. And we always do a cooking punch reception. And as with Philharmonic recently, they have Grater's ice cream. So get ice cream and cookies and punch after the show on the 8th of December. And then just a couple teas for next year. I just was at a conference that I got to see this one of the groups that I'm presenting, the Fitzgeralds, and they're going to be in my theater on the 24th of February, which is a Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. I just saw them perform. There are three siblings with a friend of theirs who they do step dancing and fiddling, and they're like national world champion fiddlers and step dancing champions, and I was exhausted watching them for like 15 minutes. They are amazingly talented vocalists and performers. It's going to be a terrific show. It's very much in the line of what the Tamboritzins do, only on a smaller scale.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're interested, that's going to be a really good show. That's on February 24th. And, of course, I've got Beatlemania Magic coming up in March, March 23rd. I've had them a couple times before, and that's a Saturday at 8 p.m. And if you ever saw the Beatles perform live, or if you never got a chance to, this is a really good opportunity. They are amazingly like the Beatles, and it's just it's a great, great performance.
So. I vouch for that. I'm looking at the program of the Performing Arts Series at Suck Up Theater, and there's a portrait of Alexander Hamilton in here.
Mm-hmm.
So also, of course, his portrait is on the $10 bill.
Right.
But you wonder if that's what they really looked like. I was reading a story, I don't know, 5-10 years ago about the history of photography. And one of the first presidents that we actually have a photograph of, Lincoln was early, But it was around that time that daguerreotypes came into play, and we had the Civil War is the first war that there's ever any actual pictures of. Yeah. Prior to that, it was an artist's drawing.
Right.
And it was the same for previous presidents. We have, there's no picture of George Washington. There's no picture of Thomas Jefferson.
Right.
These were portraits commissioned by artists, and as you know, whoever's paying the bill, you know, my eyes don't look quite right, or my ears are too big. Right. Fix that up there.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering
early version of Photoshop.
I'm wondering if that's really what Hamilton looked like. We really don't know, do we?
Well, that's one of the things I will say that I tried to be very, very careful with the research on this, because, for instance, his mother, there was no images because she wasn't, you know, for any reason well known enough for anybody to do an image of her. But as you're saying, you know, when later on, when people become famous, then they do have someone who paints their portraits frequently. And I tried to include only those images that I knew were accurate from the time period, actual artists who had done work, you know, on portraits, Washington, Hamilton. There's a lovely portrait of Hamilton's wife. And I should mention along those lines that one of the reasons why I think this musical is so popular is because it's an incredibly powerful love story between Hamilton and the woman who would become his wife, Eliza Schuyler. She was one of three sisters. Actually, there were five sisters, but the three oldest ones were very close in age. And Hamilton happened to meet the middle one. But that's a big, big part of the musical.
I didn't know anything about that.
The dynamic between Eliza and Hamilton, and also the oldest sister, Angelica. And Eliza and Angelica were just very, very tight. And all during his life, after he married Eliza, Angelica, in fact, was Hamilton's most trusted advisor.
Huh.
He would ask her for advice about politics and issues of the day. She communicated with Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin. She is a powerhouse intellect in the time period. She deserves her own musical, Angelica Schuyler. So it's really a much more complicated story than you might think. Just one quick story about the fact that this is a love story. When he first met Eliza, Hamilton is a man of incredible intellectual power and memory. But there's a story told that one evening after visiting with Eliza, he was coming back to his headquarters and he forgot the password to get back past the guard. And the guard knew who he was, but apparently he wanted to have some fun with Hamilton, and he, you know, let him stew for a few minutes before he finally said, okay, I know who you are, you can go back. But he just couldn't come up with the password, and people said he was just so struck with Eliza that it just messed with his head. One of his friends said after he met her, he's a gone man. That's how he was described.
Kind of like Jefferson until Ben Franklin brought his new wife to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
He wasn't able to complete the Declaration of Independence. Yeah. Brought his wife up, and it was done the next day.
Yeah, really. Right.
That's a great story. Three sisters, huh?
There were three older sisters, and there were two younger sisters. In fact, there were some brothers, too. That's one of the little inaccuracies of the musical. They suggest at one point that Philip Schuyler, the father, didn't have any sons, and he did. But that's a minor point.
Shades of Sense and Sensibility. Is that Pride and Prejudice, where the three sisters? I get those mixed up all the time.
It's a very complicated story. Just one quick, you mentioned the duel, of course. That's what everybody remembers.
Mm-hmm.
The duel itself is so fascinating in the fact that the pistols that were used were owned by Angelica's husband, John Barker Church. They were his dueling pistols. He'd used them himself a half dozen times. In fact, he had had a duel with Aaron Burr as well earlier. And not only that, but those were the same pistols that killed Hamilton's son. His son, Philip, died 3 years earlier in a duel.
My gosh.
And
did he ever face charges after killing Hamilton?
That's an interesting question, too. And yes, he was charged with murder because dueling was not legal, even though it was accepted among this class of gentlemen. It was not legal. The penalty for dueling was more stiff in New York than it was in New Jersey, which is why the dueling grounds are actually across the river in New Jersey. Wow. There's a line in the play, everything's legal in New Jersey.
the vice president was indicted for murder. That makes Spiro Agnew look a little bit better, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yes. Yes. Much better light on Spiro.
Right. And eventually the charges were dropped and he came back. But it did destroy his reputation, Aaron Burr. And the irony of that is he was trying to restore his reputation as he saw it. And in fact, he destroyed it.
Yeah. This is fascinating stuff to me. Folks, this Sunday, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Suckup Theater, Steve Cicero will be there with many, many interesting stories about Alexander Hamilton, the man, the myth, and the musical. Will you talk a little bit about the musical, too?
Absolutely, yes. In fact, that's one of the things I've done with this version of this program is I've expanded it to include a lot of selections. I had a good friend who helped me to edit down, you know, a snippet of 15 seconds here, 30 seconds here, or a minute here. And we're going to include a lot of that music to illustrate the history.
So if you're lucky enough to have a ticket for Hamilton when it's coming to Pittsburgh in January, this will be good background for you. If you don't have a ticket and can get one, this will be a little preview for maybe somewhere down the line when you'll finally be able to see
Indeed.
It.
Indeed.
Yes, exactly.
Thanks, guys, for being here today.
Thank you, Dave.
So
it's always
Dave.
A pleasure.
I appreciate
good stuff.
It.
Good stuff. Hey, we're going to find out about a good. I never heard of this organization until about a week or so ago. It's a national nonprofit. It's called Our Revolution. And there's a Butler County chapter. One of the things they would like to do is reform campaign laws at election time. So we'll talk with a representative of the Butler chapter. He's Dane Winkler, and he'll be with us coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be back right after these words.
Helping one another is what Central Electric Cooperative's Family Fund is all about. This program helps members pay their electric bill when times are tough. The funding comes from members who round up their electric bills to the nearest whole dollar. Members can also make a one-time or monthly donation. Funds are distributed by local social service agencies to qualified members. 357 families were assisted in paying their electric bill in 2017. If you are a Central Electric member, why not help those less fortunate by donating to the Family Fund today? To learn more about energy assistance, new products, and saving money on your energy bill, visit our website at www.central.coop. This is Ken Molesky with Central Electric Cooperative. Our tradition is to service. Our responsibility is to safety. Central Electric Cooperative is an equal opportunity provider and employer.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Fall flower bulbs are in at Osterling's Lawn and Garden. Stop in for tulips, crocuses, hyacinths, and more. Don't forget Espoma organic flower fertilizer, bulb dust, and bulb planters. Stock up on pantry staples like Rata cutlery gift sets, Conjager jerky mixes, and a variety of flour. Plus, Osterling's has post-property signs, reflective driveway markers, Imperial whitetail supplements, dog and cat warmer, Hamilton dog collars, and check out the new Halloween and Thanksgiving greeting cards from Leanin' Tree. You can find it all at Osterling's Lawn and Garden in Butler.
Welcome back, good friends. We move into the next segment of our It's Your Turn program today. As I mentioned a moment or so ago, we have a representative, local representative of what is a national organization called Our Revolution. Dane Winkler is here to talk about it. Dane, I told our listeners I had not heard of this organization until a week or so ago when I saw that we had a local, an active local group.
Yeah, this was started August 2016. It was about 2 months after the Democratic National Convention. Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign went all the way up to the day of the convention, and then he conceded to Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And he was probably anticipating that for quite some time, but it made a pretty good run of it. And so in the aftermath of losing that nomination for president, he created this organization to help progressives get elected all over the country. And I had used my social media and talking to people face-to-face about the issues that Bernie was campaigning for. And whenever I saw he launched Our Revolution, I thought I looked online to see if there was a group anywhere in Western Pennsylvania, and there wasn't, so I started it. Mm-hmm. And I started it earlier this year, so it was about a year and a half after the national organization started. And the number one issue that I think that Our Revolution goes for is getting big money out of politics. So that's what we're trying to accomplish before the end of this calendar year.
Now, the reason that we're talking about this week is that your local chapter of this national organization is urging Butler City Council to adopt a resolution to this effect, right?
Right. Yeah, and it's just a resolution. It's not a law or an ordinance or anything like that. It's just the city council claiming that two essential parts: money is not free speech, and corporations are not people. That's all we want. We want to get it on the record that that's what the city council thinks. It's a representation of what the people want. And similar resolutions have been passed in about 800 municipalities across the country and in 19 states. So we're just trying to add to that momentum. The ultimate goal is to pass what would become the 28th Amendment, which would...
to the Constitution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We haven't had an amendment to the Constitution since 92, I think.
It's been a while. Let's see. We had the Succession Act, where if a president becomes incapacitated, the vice president takes over. And that was...
Yeah, and that was like...
26 or something, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. After I get past the first 10... It's hard for me to remember.
I've been studying them ever since I started this group because I want to make sure I have all my facts straight when I'm talking to people.
Well,
I think it was when Clinton was in office, so 92 or 3, something like that. I think it was 27th Amendment is that Congress can't give themselves raises in the middle.
Yeah, of that's session. One.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that was
your name. Of course, one of the biggest ones in the past century is giving women the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be coming up on the centenary of that historic amendment in 2 years. It was in 1920.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing that it took that long?
Yeah. Women couldn't vote in the United States until 1920.
Less than 100 years ago. Weird.
Wow.
There are probably some women alive today that may or may not remember that.
It's hard to believe, actually.
Yeah.
You know, given what we know and what we think today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was a constitutional amendment. It's very difficult, however, to amend the United States Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
The Founding Fathers did it that way on purpose.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they'd still feel that way today, but you have to jump through all kind of hoops, don't you? It has to be approved by two different sessions of Congress, and then it goes to a referendum by the people. It goes on the ballot or something like that?
Yeah, it's. I think there's two different ways you can do it, but the one that I know about is takes 2/3 vote in both the House and the Congress, and then each state has to ratify it.
That's what it is.
Yeah, I think it's 32 states have to ratify it.
And that's how, and this is another case somewhat analogous to giving women the right to vote, we had the Equal Rights Amendment, which was, I'm going to guess, 20 years ago.
Sometime in the 70s.
Fairly close. Was it longer than that?
But it's still not passed.
Yeah, it didn't. Yeah. And that's what I mean. You look at it today and you said, how could the Equal Rights Amendment not pass?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody that I talk to today believes that women should get equal pay for equal work, the Equal Rights Amendment. But it didn't pass. It wasn't approved by the votes of 2/3 of the states.
Yeah. Yeah, if I remember it correctly, the House and Senate both passed it, but not all the states ratified it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. Yeah, when it started to go in a referendum before all the states, it didn't get the required number of states to approve.
Yeah.
Seems preposterous.
It does, yeah.
But it didn't
happen.
There's
been you know, four feminist waves, you know, in U.S. history, depending on who you talk to.
Yeah.
We might be in, like, the fifth one right now. So maybe it's getting passed. You know, sometimes you see and hear people talk about it. So.
The Pennsylvania Constitution, there's one on, it can be amended in another way. And of course, we're talking not about the U.S. Constitution, but Pennsylvania Constitution. You can call a constitutional convention, which was done, by the way, back in the late 60s. I don't know the exact date, 68, 69, or something like that. And if you call a constitutional convention, you can change anything you want within the Constitution. It's not just one individual thing like equal rights or something like that. Ironically, for all the people today who are clamoring to reduce the size of the state legislature, at that constitutional convention in the late 60s, the size of the Pennsylvania state legislature was increased because that's what people wanted to do back then.
Wow.
And then, now they want to make it smaller.
I think it should be smaller.
A lot of folks do, but it's just kind of ironic to think that, you know, in fairly recent history, within the last 50 years, it went just the other way.
Yeah, it is strange. With the budget issues we've had in this state, it's a great place to start saving money.
To get back to when we're chatting here, folks, with Dane Winkler, who's a local. Are you an officer or?
Yeah,
of the local Our Revolution chapter here in Butler. They're urging Butler City Council to approve a resolution. Is that going to be on the agenda tonight? Have you heard?
Yeah.
Are they going to consider it or not?
It's on the agenda, and the resolution was created by an organization called Move to Amend, and their goal is to pass the 28th Amendment. And I made a couple of adjustments to their model resolution and gotten some positive feedback, some negative feedback. But they're supposed to vote on it tonight, and we'll see what happens. If if it goes through, great. I'll send out a press release, and we'll see if we can get a similar resolution passed in other municipalities around Butler County, and hopefully that picks up and spreads. And if it doesn't pass, then you know we'll go to Plan B.
Now, refresh my memory on this, Dane. Didn't the Supreme Court rule in some way would affect this? Didn't the Supreme Court rule that corporations have the same rights as people in terms of donating to political campaigns just within the past 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, it was 2010, Supreme Court.
A little longer than that, okay.
Yeah. People have been fighting against that ruling since within months of it being passed.
Would the proposed constitutional amendment that you're discussing, that would
effectively overturn
that Supreme Court ruling?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Supreme Court ruled that corporations can donate unlimited sums of money to political action committees, and they can do that because their money is the equivalent of free speech. So so you can see how that can become a problem. Since 2010, we've seen every year it's just more and more money gets spent on elections. And it drowns out regular folks like you and I who, you know, we just want to live comfortably. We want to live safely. We want to have clean air and have fair elections and so on and so forth. And, you know, a democratic nation as like we should be. But whenever money is equal to free speech, you know, some people's voices are much louder than others. And, you know, what makes it even more unfair is that as an individual, you are limited on how much money you can donate to a political campaign. But a corporation can donate to a PAC or a super PAC. And that's an acronym for Political Action Committee. And then the PACs then donate to the campaign.
So if I, as an individual, want to support financially the campaign of candidate X, whoever that might be, there's a limit to what I can contribute to his or her campaign.
Yeah, but a corporation.
But a corporation has no limit to what they can contribute to a political action committee.
Directly, a corporation is limited if they donate directly to the campaign. But if they give it to the PAC and the PAC gives it to the campaign, it's unlimited. Mm. And where it becomes a real problem is that PACs don't have to report where they get their money from. Campaigns do, but they just say, I got it from the Malarkey Pact or wherever. And so you can, so money can be hidden. We don't know where it's coming from. That's where you get the term dark money.
Yeah. PAC, by the way, just so nobody's confused, that's short for Political Action Committee, PAC, right. PAC.
Yeah, it's like a 501c4, I believe, is what it is.
So by corporations, and we're talking millions here. We're not talking $100 donations.
Yeah.
They don't have to identify where the money came from.
No, there are some PACs that do it ethically. They say, you know, we're gonna release a report publicly by our own free will to just so everybody knows where the money's coming from, mm-hmm. for transparency. And some PACs say, there's no law requiring me to do that, so I'm not going to tell you. So, and that money could come from anywhere. It could come from Canada. It could come from Australia. It could come from Russia. It could come from the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows.
So that's why we see TV ads today at election time. We do see ads that are paid for by the candidate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they'll say, I'm Joe Schmo and I approve this ad. Mm-hmm. But then we see these other ads, and mostly they're these really, really negative ones.
Right.
And at the end they'll say, not approved by any candidate. You know? What the heck does that mean?
Paid for by such and such PAC.
Yeah, and the names of these PACs are, you know, paid for by the Apple Pie and Motherhood PAC. You know, well, who's going to go against them, for goodness sakes?
Yeah, but but who's paying them?
Yeah. Well, we don't know.
Probably not apple pies and mothers. Yeah.
So anyway, that's one of the prime goals of your group.
Yeah, and I think the reason why, whenever I started this Our Revolution local group, I decided that, you know, during this time of every day, there's a new thing to be outraged about. You get a headache because there's so many issues. Every day it's a new problem. It's a new thing to be mad about. I said, this issue is, I think, like the linchpin type of issue that kind of infects all other issues in the country. So when you start going down the line and you start naming off all the issues like income inequality, student debt crisis, too much fossil fuels being burned, they all kind of tie in to dark money and too much money being donated to campaigns, mm-hmm. and you don't know where it's coming from. So I think if we tackle the issue of getting big money out of politics, then it makes every other issue a little bit easier to address. So I just decided, you know, by the end of 2018, we're gonna pass this resolution and just be a part of the solution. Butler's a small town, but, you know, all change happens from the ground up. Whether you're talking about politics, business, or sports, anything, you have to start from the bottom and work your way up. I think President Obama said, change doesn't come from Washington, it comes to Washington. So
has there been feedback? I assume that this resolution is being brought forth in a number of other places, a number of other states across the country. Has there been any reaction so far?
Yeah, a lot of states have passed. I can't rattle off all of them. I know Alaska and Hawaii both have passed resolutions stating that money is not free speech and corporations are not people. But in Western PA, there are no other municipalities that have passed a resolution. Mm-hmm. There's a couple in Toledo, Ohio has one. There's a couple of small towns in Kentucky that have done the same. But, you know, we need to get more. And
is it controversial in some places?
Being honest, that's a good question. I don't really know. I know I face a little bit of resistance here. You know, people, they're just checking, you know, the city council members are just checking to make sure that they're not violating anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're doing their job. But the job is also to exercise the will of the people. You know, if enough people want change, then they should be a Trojan for that change. So
a lot of people look at dark money, which you explained very well, but also lobbying is, you have to think if the If the founding fathers were alive today, well, you know, the old joke, if they were alive today, they'd roll over in their grave. Yeah. At the at the amount of lobbying money that's tossed around these days, you know, to try to, obviously, to influence politicians to vote, you know, for these companies that are putting out all the lobbying. There's even, there's one section in Washington, D.C., it's K Street. It's where, that's where all the big lobbyists are. For all the big corporations and so on.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there are good lobbyists out there, and there are not so good lobbyists out there. So sometimes lobbying gets a bad rap, but you know, we have, you know, the Pennsylvania Dairy Association is a lobby. I'm sorry if I said that wrong, but you know, they've been slipping, losing grip in this state for a number of years. But they have lobbyists, and you know, we have neighbors right here in Butler who are affected by the, you know, the downturn of the Pennsylvania dairy market, and they have lobbyists that work for them. So lobbying is good in that case, but in other cases it's not so good.
I guess, I don't know, maybe I've got my head in the sand about lobbying. I mean, maybe I'm just too naive on the issue. I mean, if you're talking whatever,
Depends on what you're talking about.
Let's take dairy farmers, for example, or you know, the downturn in the dairy business. In my naivete, I say, well, if you could explain this situation to lawmakers and say, look, here's the deal, you know, don't you think it's pretty obvious? That's one thing. But pump millions into their campaign and say, well, what do you think now? You know, that's where I lose it, you know, because of course they're going to, if you're pumping millions of dollars into their campaign, of course they're going to look more favorably on what you're saying.
Yeah, and it's, that's that state. But, you know, that's the way it works. Like, I guess what happened? Walmart killed one of the contracts with the local Pennsylvania dairy farmers. Mm-hmm. Who did that? Probably a lobbyist. Or a lobbying group, and the local farmers had their own lobby association. They lost out. Why? Probably because they didn't have so much money.
Yeah.
So there, you know, if you have two lobbyists going head to head, more money wins.
Well, I suppose I'm being naive, but I think that the decision should rest on the merits of the argument.
Yeah.
Not on which side has the most money. That's to what you know, to slip into the campaign of the people who vote. Well, we dream, I guess. So do you have other missions in the organization, or are you focusing on this this dark money issue first of all?
We're hoping to get this passed before the end of the year, and then whenever 2019 comes, try to find another issue that's on the Iowa Revolution slate of issues. If you go to ourrevolution.com/issues,
there's a website.
You'll see all the things the political platform that Our Revolution stands for. There are a lot of people. You know, the trick is that how do we affect that change at a local level? And here in Pennsylvania, you know, energy is always a topic of conversation. So there's a lot of climate change and anti-fracking activists in Butler County. So I'm thinking that 2019 will probably be the year that we try to do something like that. I've been in touch with some local people, and there's a group up in Slippery Rock called Citizens Climate Lobby. They have a pretty good plan about how to put a fee on carbon drilling, which we don't have here in Pennsylvania. And every other state that's fracking, their state charges them a fee to once you break ground, you have to pay a fee. Pennsylvania doesn't have that. And, you know, that's an example of the rich getting richer and the people who own the land basically not receiving any funds from that, you know. And so that could be something we'll look at in 2019.
Take a quick break here. We'll wrap up our conversation with Dane Winkler in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. here in Butler. Holidays just around the corner, I guess. Thanksgiving's a week from today. Listen, if you're cleaning up, maybe in advance of the holidays, family, guests coming in, whatever, and you end up with stuff that you don't need or want anymore, we're talking like clothing, shoes, furniture, household items, instead of just tossing that stuff into the dumpster or the landfill, why not donate to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store? You're not going to use it anyway. And instead of putting it in the landfill, let them sell it. These items will be available for purchase by people who probably wouldn't be able to afford it otherwise. And here's the best part of all. Every penny that's generated from the sales of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in the Greater Butler Mart stays here in Butler County. It helps to support their food bank and their client aid program. So what's wrong with that picture? Nothing, huh? They're open Monday through Saturday, 6 days a week, 9 to 7. The Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store is in the Greater Butler Mart, Route 8, just south of Butler. Tons of free parking right outside the door. Drop-off bins are right inside the door. And if you have big stuff or lots of stuff like furniture, call them and they'll come pick it up in the truck. We stand the tallest when we stoop to help others. That's what they like to say at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 7878. The pick 3 is 122. The pick 4 is 6892. The pick 5, 26569. Wild ball for each of those is 5. The treasure hunt is 8, 14, 17, 20, and 25. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $71,000.
Welcome back, friends. We're talking with Dane Winkler of the local chapter of the nationwide group called Our Revolution. And there's going to be a resolution, scheduled at least, to be on the agenda for Butler City Council tonight, and that has to do with what Dane's been explaining here, the dark money and treating corporations as persons.
Yeah.
That they're hoping would lead eventually to an amendment to the U.S. Constitution. So I guess we're just going to wait and see what happens, right?
Right.
Got to get the ball rolling somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, this is what you firmly believe in.
Yeah, I think that politics has really gotten crazy over the last several years, and you know, unlimited sums of money being donated to campaigns and PACs has only exacerbated the problem. So, you know, overturning this and getting campaign finance reform at a controllable level will only be a good thing. You know, transparency across the board is how it should be.
Our campaigns are so long anymore, too.
Yeah.
You know?
They are. And if you look at the way some European countries do it, part of the way they run their campaigns, there's only a certain period where you can... where you're allowed to campaign, mm-hmm. and they're funded publicly. So, you know, if the election is on November 5th, you know, campaigning starts, say, August 5th, and you're only allowed to spend X amount of dollars. And there's actually something similar to that in Minnesota for, like, state candidates. I don't really know the details of it. Somebody was just telling me about it a few weeks ago. But, you know, it's something we should look at so that people aren't always pulling their hair out all the time with mm-hmm. all these crazy ads.
Well, we'll see. But right now, it's a money thing here in the United States, that's for sure. Yeah. Dane, thanks for stopping by. As I told you before, I had not heard of this organization until a week or so ago. And
happy to be here.
I heard that you were going to at least present a resolution to council for their consideration. And I wanted to find out more about it, and I'm sure it was interesting to our listeners as well.
Yeah. Yeah, glad to be here to talk about it. Thanks for having me in.
Thank you. Coming up on tomorrow's program, City Hall, we will be scheduled to have some representatives from city government here. We try to do that every month following a meeting of City Council. Among other things tomorrow, we'll also be talking about how to make sure that your pets are safe over the holidays. Right? What if Fido eats poinsettia berries? Is that deadly? However, that's one of the things we'll talk about on tomorrow's program. And don't forget, we have a book talk coming up in a couple of weeks with A book, a fascinating book selected by the Mars Area Public Library. Shel Ferraro will be here to talk about Lincoln's last trial. How about this? The murder case that propelled Abraham Lincoln to the presidency. He was a lawyer. That was the last case that he litigated. He defended a man who was accused of murder. Interesting. Well, if you want to read that in advance, we'll be discussing it on the 26th of November. It's a week from this coming Monday, Lincoln's last trial. Thanks for being with us today. A program note, Penguin hockey tonight here on WISR. Mike Lang will be behind the microphone calling the live radio play-by-play. Here on WISR as the Pens host the Tampa Bay Lightning. 6:30 airtime for warm-up tonight from PPG Paints Arena. I'm Dave Mullarkey. We'll see you tomorrow at 12:30 on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR 680.